Rosh Hashanah Galinsky, the Rosh Yeshiva, Talmidim, everyone who is here today, despite the generous introduction, or really I would say the excuse, for lack of a better word, as to why I was chosen to have the opportunity to speak to you this year, I would like from the outset to deflect any and all attention from myself, despite the fact that it is true that my wife and I recently made an announcement to our community that we hope, Ezras Hashem, to make Aliyah in a couple of years. In no way whatsoever do I consider myself, even at this very moment, to be unique. Anybody can make an announcement. You know, I'll accept an applause when we actually pull it off. And I don't even think the announcement is so unique. I would be surprised if there's anybody in this room, at least when I'm done speaking, who will say about yourselves that, no, that's not what you imagine, that's not what you dream for yourself as well. After all, if that is not true, then we would have to begin today by asking the most obvious question of all, and that is that why are we doing this? Why are we here, thousands of miles away, celebrating the National Day of Independence for the State of Israel? What connection do we have? What brings us to this day as a day of celebration, if not for the fact that we see this as being part of our past and our future as well? I would like to reference a Gemara that I know that is on the top of everyone's mind, because our dear and beloved President, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, recently wrote a book called The Final Exam. And even if you weren't thinking about final exams before this book was published, now we are all thinking about the final exam. The premise of that book is based on the Gemara in Shabbos, Tav Lamed Aleph, where the Gemara teaches that on the day of each and every person's Yom HaDin, they will be asked a series of questions, six questions, which is, you know, as far as I know, that's not such a difficult test, not so long, it's not multiple choice, probably essay, but even so, only six questions, and we're told in advance what the questions are going to be. The first question: did you engage honestly in your business dealings? Which, of course, it goes without saying, is one of the most important questions. And this is true regardless of whether or not you're pursuing a career in business on Wall Street in the most limited sense. Whenever there's an exchange of money, this is a question that we need to ask ourselves. Are we engaging honestly in that process, in the give and the take, in the exchange of currency between two individuals? And we can even think about it more broadly than that. The second question, Kavati Itim LaTorah. I know that I do not have to in any way whatsoever speak about the importance of Kviyas Itim LaTorah here in a yeshiva, but it's such an important question that this is what the Rabbanu Shalom asks us when it's our time to give a din b'chesed. The third question, Asakta B'Piriyah V'Rivyah. Did you engage in the efforts to build a family, something which is so primary important to each and every one of us as individuals, but perhaps more importantly, for the continued preservation and continuation of Klal Yisrael? The third question, Tzipisa L'Yeshua, did you yearn for the salvation, for the coming of Mashiach, something that we daven for each and every day, three times a day, Yeshuascha Kivina Kol Hayom? Also a very, very primary objective. Tolpalta B'Chachma, did you plumb the depths of wisdom, did you try to commit your life to the study, not just of Torah, in the, I don't want to say limited sense, but most broadly, to think about all the aspects of Chachma, of Torah, and apply it to all aspects of your life? And finally, did you think with nuance? Did you try to grow over the course of your life by taking wisdom and knowledge and learning how to apply it with nuance, with perspective, with experience? These are the six questions that we are asked when we leave this world. It would seem to me that one of these questions is very different from the others. The first three and the last two all involve doing something. Did you engage in your business dealings in an honest and in a faithful way? Did you set aside time for Torah study? Did you learn Torah? It's a very simple question, yes or no. We are not asked if we wanted to learn Torah. We're not asked if we wanted to engage honestly in business. The Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't ask us, did you want to build a family? Asakta b'piriyah v'rivyah. Did you do all that you can to make that happen? See, Pisi Lishu is a strange question because we're not being asked if we did anything. On the surface, it's merely a question of, did you want something? Did you yearn for it? What's the mila in that? What is the great benefit in wanting something? Why is that so important? And if you want to tell me it's important, the big scheme of life, how does it make it, literally, again, as Rabbi Berman says, to the final exam? Why is that so important? So what? I wanted it. And what did you do about it? Nothing. So why does that matter? Why does that matter so much? And going back to the reference to tefillah that I just mentioned a moment ago, it's absolutely amazing. When you think about it, there is no other part of davening, to my knowledge, where the very justification for our asking for something is, why? Because we want it all the time. We don't say, we all want people to get better, and Hashem should heal them from the illness. But it's only when it comes to Yeshua that we say, this is such an important part of the process. And why is that? So I want to share with you an answer by way of another question that I heard years ago. I heard this question in the name of Moshe Shapiro's Zochanah Livracha, and it's based on the part of that Gemara that doesn't always get quite as much attention, but is clearly in context connected. And that is, immediately before the Gemara tells us about the final exam, the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu, where we see a breakdown of the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. And what the Gemara doesn't say explicitly, but clearly alludes to, and many of the Mefarshim point this out, but again, like I said, it's almost glaringly obvious when you learn the Gemara more than once, is that there seems to be a symmetry of sorts, a connection that is drawn between the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah and these six questions. Other than the fact that it sits in 6-6, it runs much deeper than that. So let's go back. The first of the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah say the Zrayim, associated with the first question. The Satav and the Satav Amunah, did you engage in your business dealings honestly? Until very recently, Wall Street was Seder Zrayim. The book that deals with the laws of agriculture, that's where business, that's where commerce takes place. And so therefore it makes sense. Thematically, it's very, very, very beautifully associated one with the other. Kavata Itim LaTorah is about sanctifying time. Do you realize the value of time? The potential to create Kedusha in time? And for that, we have Seder Moed, in which we learn about the potential of Kedusha Sazman, Kedusha Shabbos, Kedusha Yom Tov, which is in many ways associated with the concept of Kvias Itim, the Torah, and for matters of Kedusha more broadly. Asakta Bepiri Verivya, with no explanation needed, very nicely associated with Seder Noshim. Here's where it gets a little tricky. See, Pisul Yeshua is somehow associated with Seder Nezikin. Now, how does that work? Certainly, far from obvious on the surface. Seder Nezikin, it's hard to summarize, and certainly in present company, it would be presumptuous of me to even attempt to do so. But even if we just stick with the first three Masechtos, which technically is one Masechta, let's just say the three Bavos. So, how could we summarize? What is it Nezikin is about? It's about laws of damage and rights and entitlements and sales and acquisitions and loans, property damage. What does this have to do with Tzipis Lishua? What is the connection between yearning for the salvation, yearning for Mashiach, and Seder Nezikin? And it's a little disappointing because as I was setting you up, as you saw, it really fit together very nicely. Granted, we're not going to have time today for Palta B'Chachma about the Dabar Mitoch Dabar, but probably you'll be able to connect them rather seamlessly to Kachem and Taurus as well. But this one sticks out. So I heard in the name of Rav Moshe Shapiro the following beautiful explanation, and that is true. That Seder Nezikin is all about rights and entitlements. It's all about what is coming to me. Should you damage me? Should you borrow money from me? Should I buy something for you and I've discovered that the merchandise is broken? So I have rights and entitlements. The halacha affords me the ability to go ahead and to essentially be toveya from you what I need. But says Rav Shapiro, all of the rights and all the entitlements in the world mean absolutely nothing unless there is a tviya. The entire Seder Nezikin presupposes that somebody's making a claim. If I borrow money from you, and you don't come to pay me back, and I see you in the street, and you say, I don't know what you're talking about, and I have a shtar, so what am I going to do with that shtar? I'm going to put it in my drawer and hope that one day somehow magically the money is going to appear? That's not the way it works. I have to take that shtar, I have to go to Beis Din and say this guy owes me money. I buy something at the store and I bring it home and the box is empty. Now what? You're right, I'm entitled. I'm entitled, very nice, but the entitlement is not going to do anything. I have to make a claim. So Hua Dinami, we can say the same thing is true when it comes to Tzipisa Yeshua. What does it mean to be Mitzapa Yeshua? So perhaps we think of Tzipisa Yeshua way too superficially. Maybe we are misinterpreting the if not the very definition, at least the import of that word. What does that mean here, Tzipisa Yeshua? Perhaps it doesn't simply mean, did you yearn for the coming of the Mashiach? Did you want Mashiach? Did you desire the Yeshua, the salvation? But it means, did you claim it? Did you make a tefillah? Did you do something? Did you do something to bring the Yeshua? Maybe that's what it means, Tzipisa of Yeshua, in which case, it's not all that far and disconnected from the entire Sefer Nezikim, which is all based on the assumption that you maybe you may feel you have a right and entitlement to something. We do feel like we have a right and entitlement to Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it's the very first Rashi in Chumash. But even Rashi would tell you, presumably, but it doesn't mean it comes automatically. It doesn't mean that there's nothing that we need to do in order to claim that chelek in Eretz Yisrael. When we think about our role here in Chutz La'aretz in particular, when we think about our connection to Eretz Yisrael on this very, very amazing and spectacular day, the 75th anniversary of, it would seem to me, I do not have the authority to say such a thing, but perhaps the greatest miracle in the history of our people since the establishment of the Beis HaMikdash, or certainly since its destruction. An event of incredible, epic proportion, the likes of which we are still coming to terms with and beginning to understand. And, you know, you really do have to pinch yourselves. I went to this very yeshiva. I remember being here as a Talmud. Perhaps I missed the Suda Sada. I know we had it, but I don't remember, certainly, the numbers and the energy that I feel in the room at this time. I don't think it's only because of the fact that, you know, we do a better job at marketing and, you know, the balloons are nicer than they were. I don't think that's what it is. I think that everyone here feels, and we felt it then as well, but we feel now, with each passing year, more and more and more, like we are coming closer to something that is so big, it is so difficult to even quantify. And so there may be a feeling on our part that, you know, just like, what shaykhus do I have to that? How can I be toveya that? So there are answers big and small, at the very least, and I don't mean to say at the very least, but as I mentioned already, by davening for it. And we do it anyway. You just need to follow the script. Rabbi Simon in Sefer Me'brach from Parshas Maaseh quotes from the Brisker Rav, who said that in the Animamins, which we attribute to the Rambam, it's only when it comes to the Animamim Bebuna Shalema Bevias HaMashiach, where we go out of our way to say the Afapishi Yismameh in Kozeh HaKelo. There may be other Ikari Amuna that we feel somewhat disconnected from, that we need to work on ourselves to develop a greater connection to. But this idea that it's constantly in Kozeh HaKelo, that I yearn for that connection at every moment of my life, this is not Kleinigkeit, nothing to make light of. This is, perhaps in many respects, the greatest tefillah. I'll say advocacy. Last night I had the opportunity to be present at a very nice Yom HaTzimut celebration in Teaneck, which was brought the entire, many segments of the Bergen County community together. I've been living in Teaneck over 20 years. We never had an event like this. And I genuinely had a sense of tremendous pride to be able to stand there together with literally thousands of other people and to be protected, as it were, by a countless number of policemen and law enforcement with a big drone show in the air, leaving all the excitement aside, what that means to be at a time in history in which we could say proudly what we stand for and how we stand aligned and connected to Eretz Yisrael, what advocacy means for each and every person is going to differ. I've made many trips to Washington on NORPAC. I'm not going to say that I always send in those letters to the White House when they ask me to do so, but I try to do so. and I am far from an example. I hope you have greater role models when it comes to advocacy, political advocacy. But these are things that we can and should do in order to be Toveya, in order to make a claim. We can and should visit Eretz Yisrael. It goes without saying that we should visit Eretz Yisrael. Many of us have had the opportunity to do so, and Be'ez Hashem will continue to do so. But ultimately, I'll end where I started. And again, it's absolutely not about me. And I'm not just saying it like in a self-deprecating way. At the end of the day, I still live here. I haven't done a mashu. I haven't started packing a box. Somebody asked me this morning how I arranged to get an apostle for my birth certificate. I don't even know what he was talking about. I'm very, very much in the early infant stages of Aliyah, and I hope Be'ez Hashem, Mashiach will bring me long before my announcement that I would be making Aliyah would actually come to be realized. But each and every one of us, I believe, and again I say this humbly, my other name to the right and to the left of me, I hope what I'm saying right now is okay. I believe it is. For each and every one of us, it should never, ever be a question of if, only a question of when. Deerfield Beach is beautiful. I have nothing against the wonderful people who retired to Deerfield Beach. It's wonderful. It's a great place to hang out. The sun is nice. And all the amenities for the nice retired Jews, it's wonderful. They should live and be well. Really, I say this without any shemits of cynicism. But when we think at this stage in our life as to where we hope Be'ezras Hashem at the right time to, I'll say retire. You can retire, you can transition at different stages in life. I don't necessarily mean retire from employment. When you are ready. So then it's a question of merely a if, of when, not if. I want to share with you, before I sit down, something that came to mind on my way in this morning, and thankfully to Google I was able to find it very easily. I'm hoping that the mashal will be very clear. If I get the sense that it's not, I'll clarify it. But this is something that I read in one of the books of Rabbi Blech, one of our beloved faculty members in Rebbeim here at Yeshiva. He has a book called, this is embarrassing, I don't remember what it's called, but it's a book about perspectives on money and wealth. It's an amazing book. If you can get your hands on it, it's a tremendous muster in that book. And in there he has this thing called The Parable of the Mexican Fisherman. This is not Rabbi Blech's creation, but he recorded there, and I was able to find it online. I want you to hear this, and I would especially love to hear what Dean Wasserman thinks about this sentence. An American investment banker was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of this fish and asked how long it took to catch them. The Mexican replied, only a little while. The American then says, why didn't he stay out longer and catch more fish? The Mexican said, I had enough to support my family's immediate needs. The American said, yeah, but what do you do with the rest of your time? The Mexican fisherman said, I sleep late, I fish a little, play with my children, take siestas with my wife Maria, stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life. The American scoffed. I have an MBA from Harvard and I can help you, he said. You should spend more time fishing, and with the proceeds, buy a bigger boat. With the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats, and eventually you will have an entire fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you could sell directly to the processor, eventually opening your own cannery. You could control the product processing and distribution. Of course, you will need to leave the small coastal fishing village and move to Mexico City, then LA, and eventually to New York City, where you will run your expanding enterprise. The Mexican fisherman said, but how long will this take? To which the American replied, it'll take about 15 to 20 years. But then what? The American laughed. He said, that's the best part. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO and sell your company's stock to the public and become very rich. You would make millions. Millions. And then what? He said that you could retire and move to a small coastal fishing village where you can sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take siestas with your wife, sip wine, and play guitar with your amigos. It's a very powerful mashal, which we can apply to many aspects of our life. I thought of it this morning on my way over here, because the question I ask myself, and again, I don't consider myself unique, is for what? And then what? We are here building great things. We are part of an amazing enterprise here in Washington Heights. And yeshiva should continue to be strong and thrive at Bias HaGoa. But we all need to ask ourselves, and then what? And then what? What is the purpose of all of this? And the answer is, like I said, it's right, we say it every day. We don't have to be imaginative, we don't have to be creative, it doesn't require a taicha or a spin. Ki yishuascha kivinu kol hayom. Because all day and every day, we should try to be mitzapeh Yeshua. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.